It's the web's only podcast completely devoted to daily fantasy sports. Welcome to the Roto-Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix. Here's your host, Dan Bach.
Hey folks, what's going on? Thanks for checking us out. We are the Roto-Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix, all presented by Daily Joust. We are the one podcast you're going to find each and every day, providing you with the most up-to-date content, talking everything that's going on in the daily, the weekly variety of fantasy sports. And of course, we all know that industry is exploding, and the podcast is going great, and we thank you for checking us out. Today, though, not lots to really talk about, because from a game standpoint, we got nothing, really. I mean, you've got two games in the NBA, so I know there's hardcore NBA guys out there who are going to get all huffy and puffy and say, you know, let's go over the matchups. I'm not going to go over the matchups for two games. I'm not playing NBA tonight. There is some college basketball this evening, and there's the one thing I'm just going to quickly bring up with college basketball, which I've seen as a pretty viable strategy, and it's kind of surprising because in most respects, for at least in terms of NBA, it's not a strategy that's employed hardly at all. And that's the old team stack, the whole stacking of a lineup from guys from one team. And you usually don't see it too often there ever, really, in the NBA. But in college, especially on Daily Joust, I've seen a lot of people use it the last week or two, and it's been somewhat successful. So maybe it'll be interesting to see if this trend continues. I think it has more to do with the fact that, you know, a lot of times in college basketball, teams are not that deep. You know, they might only play, you know, six, seven guys. So basically, if you know it's going to be a high scoring game, you take those five, six, seven guys, you can basically predict how many points you're going to get. The question is finding the other guys to complement those to kind of put you over the top. So, might try it tonight in a solo matchup or a head-to-head, just to give it a try to see if that strategy works. But it definitely isn't going to work over there on FanDuel. Their college basketball salary setup is totally different than you have at Joust, and especially because they also account for other categories. And I think that's another reason why you can do it over there on Joust as opposed to FanDuel, is FanDuel, you know, it's just night and day between the two. When you only have one category you have to worry about, you can, like I say, you can look at the over-unders and say, oh, you know, this game's got an over-under of, you know, say 180. Well, that means they're predicting almost 90 points for this one team. I know I'm going to get 90 points if I are close to 90 points, probably, if I start pretty much the entire team who actually goes out in the court and plays. So it's an interesting concept, and like I say, I'll give it a try tonight and report back to you tomorrow. But also NHL, obviously heading into the All-Star break, going to have no games there for the next couple of days. So it's pretty quiet on the daily fantasy front. There is one thing that I can't officially report yet, but Blinders over there from Fantasy Sports Live went on the Roto Grinders thread, and somebody threw out the idea of the Pro Bowl, Super Bowl combo daily fantasy action, and he said he was going to try and do some testing on it, and if it worked out, he was going to post some games. So way to step up to the plate, Fantasy Sports Live, and for that I will definitely go over there and just do it, you know, show my gratitude towards them, and you should too, because it's nice of somebody. Like I say, the key to this industry is having new and innovative things, and not that watching the Pro Bowl is going to provide me with a boatload of excitement or anything like that. But I thought it was just kind of like more of a fun idea and a way to kind of get us to at least have some sort of daily fantasy connection with the Super Bowl, besides, of course, the Survivor thing going on over there at Profanity Sports. But as we know, a lot of people are probably out of that contest already. Some really impressive showings in that. But the wonderful thing about this is, I'm not just going to like end the podcast here after 4 minutes. I was smart. I was thinking ahead. And I've said, you know, this is the time of year where unfortunately we have to do these things called taxes. And normally, you know, my wife takes a big chunk out of her paycheck every month or every couple weeks. So we usually get a nice refund this time of year. I've got a hunch it's not going to be as nice because I got to pay some money to Uncle Sam on some of these daily fantasy wins. So I talked to our resident CPA here in the Roto Grinders community. His name is Kevin. Might know him a little bit better as Roto Kevin. Smart guy. I mean, you can read his posts. Very, you know, I don't want to say well spoken in the way he writes his posts and columns and stuff like that. But clearly, the guy's very intelligent, and he wrote a great column for us discussing taxes. So I thought it would be fun to bring him on. And don't sit there and think like the conversation for the next 15 minutes is going to be entirely on taxes, because it's not. We hit up on a lot of great things, including the stacking, team stackings, what his feelings are about the industry, you know, what's the best way for these sites to, you know, keep their customers, and all sorts of interesting stuff about the industry. So this is my conversation here today with Roto Kevin. Joining us now on the podcast, we're going to speak with Kevin Dale. You might know him a little bit better as Roto Kevin. He wrote an excellent column recently about taxes and daily fantasy. And I know normally taxes are the most boring conversation to have, but it's that time of year where the 1099s are rolling in, and you got to figure out what's the best way to kind of declare some of your daily fantasy earnings. So what a better person to bring on than a CPA up there in Minnesota. Kevin, thanks for joining us on the podcast. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Dan. Happy to be here talking about the most riveting of topics.
Well, you know, before we do this, I'm just going to make this disclaimer, because you wrote it on your column, and I just want to be fair, and I don't know if I have to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. Kevin is a certified public accountant licensed to the state of Minnesota. However, any tax advice that may be contained in this podcast is not intended to be used and cannot be used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or applicable state and local tax provisions, or promoting, marketing, or recommending recommending to another party any tax-related matters addressed herein. Okay, we got that out of the way. Did I need to do that, or was that probably a smart thing to do?
You know, maybe they didn't have to, but I don't look very good in orange, so I appreciate it.
Now, you are a CPA, and you wrote this great column, and I want to first start out with my situation, because let's face it, everything's about me. But no, seriously, I am. I itemize everything already, and I had a pretty average year until the Super Joust hit, and then certainly made me very profitable for the year. What's going to be the best way for me to go about declaring my taxes? Let's say my profit, just per se, is going to be $10,000 this year in daily fantasy. What would be the best way for me to go about declaring that?
Yeah, I wish I could have an average year as bad as yours was, Dan. you're going to get a 1099 from Daily Joust in this case. And you'll probably just report it as miscellaneous income, since you already itemized, because mortgage interest, property taxes, what have you, trigger you to itemize your deductions as opposed to taking the standard deductions. So the easiest, most straightforward way is going to be to drop it on the miscellaneous income line on your 1099. It's row 30-something or 50-something. You can figure it out. TurboTax will take care of that for you. And then deduct entry fees / losses from other sites to the extent you have any on your Schedule A under miscellaneous itemized deductions.
Okay, so I can clearly just do that as a profit and loss situation where, let's say I've won quite a bit on Daily Joust, lost my ass on FanDuel for the year. I can take my losses from FanDuel and put it against my winnings, and there's not an issue with that whatsoever.
Absolutely not. I mean, you'll want to report, you should report. Obviously, reporting income is up to each individual taxpayer, but it is strongly advised to report all your earnings, whether you receive a 1099 or not. I mean, if you look at my situation, I'm going to have a 1099 from Draft Street, and I'm going to have losses from Daily Joust. So I'll basically drop my Draft Street 1099 amount on there, and the small profits I have at Draft Zone, FanDuel, and then basically write off my losses on my Schedule A.
Now, for people who don't itemize, because there's quite a few people out there who, you know, don't have to worry about, you know, like you say, mortgage interest and other things like that. They might be, I don't want to say casual players, but let's say they want to, you know, a couple thousand throughout the year. What do you say to them, somebody like that?
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of in a tough situation there. If you're not itemizing, I mean, you still should declare the income. I mean, there's no way around that. And you really have no recourse to deduct your losses without itemizing, unless you want to file a Schedule C, which is technically for a small business, self-employed individuals file that. And there, basically, your winnings would be your gross receipts or sales is basically what the line says. And you could deduct your entry fees and net losses on other sites on that form. That's a little more aggressive tactic, simply because you're basically saying, okay, I'm doing this as a for-profit enterprise. Now, the nice part is you're showing a profit, so the IRS isn't going to bat an eye at that. You're reporting income. It will allow you to also deduct losses in excess of your earnings. So you can actually show a loss. But that's kind of a red flag. And it also opens up your profits to self-employment tax, which is a whole nother piece of the pie that Uncle Sam's going to want from you. So you can do it. To the extent you show profits, I'd certainly recommend it if you can't itemize. It's a little messier. It's going to cost you a little more to have your accountant prepare your taxes, because it's going to be another form on the thing. But that's the best way to do it, so that you don't have to pay on your gross earnings. But like I said, it's a bit more aggressive, and just make sure you keep really good records in case your number gets pulled for an audit.
Well, that's my next question is, you know, we mentioned on the onset several times already that, you know, you're supposed to pretty much tell the government every dollar that you get. And as far as I know, again, I'm not the tax pro, I'm just kind of is the way I read it is, unless there's a 1099, technically they don't have any record of income coming to them. What they get on those 1099s is what they have on record of you, and even though by law you're supposed to declare everything, the government doesn't know. But where you can get in trouble is if that A word comes up. If you get an audit and they don't recognize, I mean, tell people about the audit process, because I don't really know. I've never gone through it. I don't know anybody that goes through it. I mean, if somebody's a daily fantasy player, they get audited, and there's, you know, I mean, do they go through your entire bank records and do they basically could they look at this and say, hey, you know, you made $3,000 here over the past 3 years combined. You never reported it. You know, we've got a major issue. Tell me about how that process works.
The IRS will send you a letter. You don't want to receive that letter because it's no fun. But they basically just say, prove it. And you better have your ducks in a row. And they occasionally pull bank statements and go through and say, okay, what are all these deposits coming from PayPal? Are you selling stuff on eBay, or what are you doing here? And that's where you're going to come and say, well, I was playing this cool daily fantasy game. You should take a look at it. It's a lot of fun. then, you know, they'll assess what that liability is and charge you, they'll collect the tax on that, plus penalties for not paying it, and interest accrued since you didn't pay it by the technical due date.
Sounds like a process nobody really wants to go through, that's for sure.
Exactly.
Now, you know, I've got a CPA in the family who kind of helps us out with our taxes, and, you know, I've kind of been telling her about daily fantasy and, you know, what am I going to do with these earnings, And you know, she wasn't the most clear on exactly how to deal with it. Is that going to be a problem for a lot of tax accountants out there? I mean, obviously, you're a daily fantasy player, so you kind of understand exactly what this is. But, you know, if somebody walks into their local H&R Block to go and get their taxes done and they get a 1099 from a random company that they never heard of, I mean, are they going to know exactly what to do with this?
They'll have no clue what to do with it, Dan. I mean, what your run-of-the-mill H&R Block employee is going to do is just drop that right on your miscellaneous income and not even ask if you have any expenses to claim against it.
Mm-hmm.
So they will They'll report it to the IRS in a way that you basically pay the maximum tax you could possibly pay on that, which is good from a liability perspective in that they can't come back and say, hey, you owe us more on this. But by the same token, you're giving the government more than their fair share.
Now, the last thing I want to hit up on the tax side of things is, you know, it's been a discussion just on the forums page the last week or so discussing, you know, is daily fantasy gambling? What's the difference between gambling income and daily fantasy income from the government's perspective?
The form it's reported on, I think that was talked about on the forum, you know, once before, kind of conjecture about what the site's reporting responsibility should be.
Mm-hmm.
And my argument, and take it for what it is that it's kind of a form over substance thing. Yes, there's the UIGEA, which explicitly carves out that this is not illegal gambling. It's an entirely different animal, and we love that. But if you look at the actual mechanics of it, money goes into a pool, the contest organizer takes a piece out and then pays the prizes out based on the results of the contest, which sounds and looks an awful lot like pari-mutuel gambling at a horse track.
Mm-hmm.
So the difference is you hit a pick six at a track, they're going to give you a W2G, which is the gambling winnings form. And that looks different, whereas you're just getting a 1099 miscellaneous, which is used for everything from rents to royalties to garden variety, independent contractor type income. So, I mean, the income gets reported in a very generic way where the IRS or your taxpayer aren't going to know whether it's for something like daily fantasy, something that quote-unquote resembles gambling, if you will,
yeah,
or if it's you wrote articles for that company and got paid this much amount.
But we're, as a player, we're way better off getting just these 1099 miscellaneous, because then we can actually include our losses in here. Well, if it was the W2G you said, I mean, I'm pretty sure, you know, if you hit something big at the track, you can't take off all the money that you've lost the entire year, you know, betting on the ponies, can you?
Only to the extent you can prove it. And betting on the ponies is a little tough unless you have like frequent player account, and
yeah,
your home track will give you a report saying, yeah, look at this moron, he lost $1,500 before he hit that $600 pick four. So
it's a lot easier to get that information here with what we do. Well, let's just get away from taxes again, because you probably talk about it all day and it's not the most exciting thing in the world. But you're a pretty heavy daily fantasy player yourself. You're located up in Minnesota, close enough. But you're
No. Watch yourself there. No. We don't talk about the other side of the river.
Well, you know, believe it or not, I was born in Red Wing, Minnesota. A little bit of trivia there for you. So actually,
well,
let me.
Atta boy, I've been there.
You know, let me take that back. This just shows you how long it's been. I wasn't born in Red Wing. I lived there for a little bit. I was born in Mankato, Minnesota, the training camp home of the Minnesota Vikings.
That is correct. I have several friends in Mankato. I grew up 60 miles from Mankato, small town of 800 people.
But I'm impressed. You don't sound too Minnesotan for somebody who's lived there.
Oh, the boat floats in Minnesota, Dan.
I like it. You put on the radio voice for us. That's good. But you're a hockey guy. I want to know what it is. You know, I don't talk to a lot of the daily hockey players. I was checking your profile. You like to play daily fantasy hockey. Tell me about that. I mean, what sites do you like to play? How has the competition been? And, give me a thoughts as being a daily fantasy hockey guy.
I'll tell you, I'm a hockey guy only because it resembles baseball in terms of sort of the strategy I apply to it. I mean, if I had to say what sport I play the most, it's baseball. That's the sport I understand the best. But hockey's very similar. I mean, instead of choosing a starting pitcher, you're choosing a starting goalie, and the idea is the same. You're trying to pick someone that has a matchup where they're not going to get scored upon. And that's how you find your goalie. And then, you know, stacking's prevalent in those two sports. Mainly because your production is correlated to your teammates' production. I mean, it's they're low scoring sports relative to football and basketball. So anytime you can get multiple pieces of one scoring play, whether it be an assist and a goal in hockey or the hit, run, and RBI all on one pitch in baseball, I mean, that gives you an advantage in terms of being able to put up points, just because scoring's hard to predict in general. You might be able to pinpoint which game is likely to have scoring, but picking which player is going to hit that two-run double or which player is going to be on the ice when the goal is scored is that's almost a fool's errand. You're best just targeting games and taking the best players you can under the salary cap in those games.
Well, since you like both hockey and baseball, those are the main sports where stacking is prevalent. And FanDuel came out with their quasi anti-stacking legislation, which I don't think it's going to affect much in the long run. What's your feeling on stacking? Do you think there should be restrictions? Do you think you should just let the games play as they are? What's your feelings on that?
It's a perfectly viable strategy. I mean, for the most part, it's kind of boom or bust. So, I mean, if you're cool riding the ebbs and flows of that, perfect. But, I mean, scoring is correlated among teammates in those two sports. So it makes sense. It's hard to pick, which player in the middle of the Tigers lineup is gonna produce. But you're pretty sure the Tigers are going to score some runs against the Twins. So it makes sense to load up on a few guys in that team. I don't know if making an entire team and then taking a starter from some other game makes perfect sense. But I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I think it's just fine. I think it kind of gets to the more the root cause here is player pricing. I mean, if players are priced in a way that makes it difficult to fit an entire team under one salary cap, you don't need the rules that say, hey, you have to take guys from three games instead of just the two that are required by the law.
Totally in agreement with you. I think it has everything to do with salary structures and making sure, by doing that, it's pretty much near impossible to, especially for baseball, for example. If you want to take a whole Red Sox team, you're going to have the absolute worst starter of the entire night from a pitching perspective. But it'll be interesting to see, if that changes a little bit on some of the sites this upcoming season, because I know, to me, I think salary structure is probably one of the most important things that daily fantasy sites do. And unfortunately, I think it's somewhat ignored on some places. I don't understand why these things wouldn't be changed on a nightly basis, because to me that pretty much sets up how the game is played. And for one, there's nothing more frustrating for me than playing the same guy every night and having overlaps because a guy's salary hasn't changed in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to baseball season, a good example is when Desmond Jennings got called up in Tampa. I mean, he was $2,500 bucks on FanDuel, and if everyone has Desmond Jennings, nobody wins.
Yeah.
It's just a free square for everyone's lineup.
Yeah, and that's pointless. I mean, I understand you're going to have those issues in the beginning for a day or two when somebody comes up, but I have to think that hopefully that's something FanDuel adjusts down the road. Tell me, as a player, what's the biggest draw for you to a site? I mean, there's so much. So many places, so many options out there to play. What's going to get them to get you to come to their site?
That's an excellent question. I mean, I play just about everywhere. I mean, if you look at my profile, I've got wins in the past year from Joust, FanDuel, DraftStreet, DraftZone, Profanity, BuzzDraft, FanSportsLive. I've played just about everywhere. Really, I don't know that there's anything a particular site can do. I concentrate my play on the sites in the games where I've discovered, I don't know if I have an advantage or not, but that I've done well.
Mm-hmm.
For example, going through baseball season, I was an absolute waste of space at FanDuel and Daily Joust, but I did really well at DraftStreet. Come basketball season, I'm not a big basketball guy, but I'm getting some traction finally at Draft Day. And that's just where my basketball play is going to be focused now, because that's where I'm trying to profit. I mean, I think so many players spread themselves way too thin, and you can't possibly get an advantage playing 10 different formats on 10 different sites. You really need to focus, really understand the pricing engine and the roster formats, the scoring system, really intimately know those in order to sort of get monopoly profits, if you will.
I think that's a good assessment. I think, and I think there's hot streaks and cold streaks, you know, that that go from site to site. I mean, there was a time there where I couldn't lose on Draft Street for a week straight. Next week, I can't win over there. It's kind of like, you know, that's the one thing about it is if you hit a rough patch somewhere else, you can try a different site. Obviously, no two sites are exactly the same. But I think, you know, going forward, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, which sites survive, which ones don't. Because I don't think it's possible for there to be, you know, I mean, what we have is a lot, but there's even more coming on their way. But what do you, you know, last thought from you, what do you think some of these sites need to avoid? Like, is there anything, is there a pitfall as a player of a certain aspect of a game or a salary structure or anything like that that you think that, you know, these sites need to kind of shy away from?
Don't make the game too easy. I mean, I know the industry needs to cater to new players, but I mean, to the extent you can expand rosters, add a couple flex positions, give really the player more choices so you don't have so much overlap. I mean, I really like Draft Street's larger rosters for baseball. I just think having to choose a pitching staff of four guys is a completely different game from, I think, just about everyone uses just a single starting pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think if you dumb it down, that's probably the wrong term, but I mean, if you dumb it down too much, everyone starts putting together teams that look a lot alike. So I think to the extent that you can make it a little more complicated for sort of the seasoned players. I mean, there's always going to be a spot for the more simplistic games for the new players. But let's not forget that the quote new players to daily fantasy aren't typically new to fantasy sports in general. I mean, they're playing in season long leagues that have way more complex rules than anything daily fantasy is ever going to put together. I mean, with, you know, dynasty leagues where you hold everyone and salaries go up X percent per year and you can trade draft picks. I mean, these aren't fantasy idiots. I mean, these are people by and large that are used to very sophisticated games. And I think to the extent that we can offer daily fantasy products that mirror those in some way, shape, or form, I think that's really the key to growing it.
I think you just hit something right on the head there, because you're right. It's like the people who come to the site, they're not people who have zero fantasy sports experience. You know, I'd say 99% of the people who run into a daily fantasy site and get involved and start playing consistently are people who are already fantasy players. And it doesn't take a genius how to figure out, you know, some, you know, to make things a little bit more complex. So I think that's an excellent point that you just made. Well, Kevin, it's been an absolute pleasure talking taxes, but more just talking daily fantasy. That was a good time. And down the road, we'll definitely have you on again. Thanks for your time today.
Hey, thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
I want to throw a quick thank you out to my good friends at Daily Joust, the sponsor of this podcast. And if you haven't gone over to Joust, you should know you better be doing it, because we've got our incentives program that we run with them right through Roto Grinders. Signed up on our links, and then you can get into our incentives program, which means we're giving you daily projections for pretty much everybody out there in the NBA. Also getting a $500 free roll every month. That's right, every month, and it's only for incentives members, so you don't have to worry about beating like 600, 700, 800 people to win that cash. So do that again, signing up on our links here on rotogrinders.com. And of course, by doing that, you also get a nice little bonus on their site. They're running solo action. Make sure you get involved in that. Of course, NBA only two games tonight, but they've got a little bit of action. But college hoops, I gave you a little team stacking advice, might be something you want to check out if you maybe want to earn an extra badge or two to try to get into the top 40 for the Super Joust, which of course is going to be happening in mid-April, so plenty of time for you to earn your entries into this Super Joust. So we want to thank them. Great sponsor here of the podcast. They're dailyjoust.com. And with that, it's time for me to say goodbye to you. We return tomorrow, wrap up the week in style. I'm promising something big and exciting on the podcast tomorrow, but that's all I'm going to discuss about. It's just kind of like a tease, make you come back for more. So we thank you for checking us out. Please follow us on Twitter at RotoGrinders. You can download this podcast on iTunes, subscribe to it, have it for you each and every day, and leave any comments you may have here on our podcast page. Until tomorrow, everybody, have yourself a great night. It's been another edition of the Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix, presented by Daily Joust, and we will see you.